I'm still
Love
trying to
talk
learn.
Radio.
Still, here, let's go quiet. Welcome, everybody, to the Parent Universe. Today is Thursday, July 23rd, 2009. This is Doug Kelly, your host. I'm here with Grant Rubin. Don't say Grant.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Doug. Welcome.
Yes, and we have a great show on tap tonight. We have a panel of guests that we're going to be discussing the reinventing the paranormal field. And among our guests, of course, is you probably remember Mike Jones. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. How's it?
Mike is the regional director, CTFI director for Arkansas. We also have Juan Torres in the greater Phoenix area. He is the regional CTFI director for Arizona. Hey, Juan.
Hey, Doug.
And also Brian Parsons in the greater Cleveland area, who is the Ohio state director for CTFI program. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Greetings, Doug. Thank you.
Yes, it's good to have everybody here. Tonight, this is a special time and a special show. We're going to go 90 minutes. We're going to be discussing reinventing the paranormal field. The basic premise for this, and we've talked about this on past shows, and basically it's this. We haven't made a whole lot of progress over the last decade or two in the anomalous research field, and by that I mean hauntings, ufology and abductions primarily. And so what do we do now? I mean, you can only log so many sightings of whether it's a ghost or a UFO or an abduction. You can only go so far. What are we going to do now? And so that's the kind of the premise for this show. And let's go ahead and take any thoughts. If anybody has any opening thoughts, they'd like to make a brief comment. Just say, hey, not everybody at once now. Now, this is going to be a bit of a discussion, but a laid-back show like always. So, all right, let's talk about our basic premise. The big thing about reinventing the wheel, I guess it would be reinventing the wheel a little bit on the paranormal field, is what do we do now? It's like, are we making any progress? Are we really learning anything new? And is it meaningful? And I'm going to start out with just the first point. We have a list of points we're going to discuss. And that first point is evidence. Now, one of the things we've been talking about on the show is meaningful evidence. And so many of us, I think, have come to the point, and I certainly have come to the point where pictures and video is almost, underline that, almost worthless because they're so easily fabricated. And so my basic premise from here on out is whenever I see a picture or even a video that is purported to be paranormal or suspected to be paranormal, the question I ask first is this. Assuming that it is paranormal in nature, will it tell us anything we don't already know? Does it have meaning to add to our knowledge base? If the answer is yes, then continue the picture to determine its authenticity. If the answer is no, don't waste your time on it. I'm looking for meaningfulness. Anybody have a comment on that one way or another?
Well, are we talking, this is Juan, by the way, are we talking specifically photos and videos, or would we also...
We can branch out. We can start with photos and videos and brand.
Okay. Well, I mean, I see your point. It's dependent on the quality of the photograph or the video, how it was taken. A lot of stuff nowadays can be fabricated, especially with how powerful computers are. So I guess I would have to agree with you that that in and by itself can't prove or disprove whether there's activity going on or if it's a UFO type thing, if you know, whether something was actually sighted or not. But I still think that it holds value if it's in context with other stuff, whether it be witness testimony or readings or whatever the case may be. In and by itself, yeah, I would have to agree with that. That it's too easily fabricated, especially nowadays. That you know, just somebody showing you a picture and saying, "Hey, here, look, there's a ghost." It's just you can't hold weight just to the picture or the video by itself.
I agree. Let me ask you: has everybody been able to log into the chat room? Okay.
No, I'm still having problems myself.
Anybody get into the chat room?
No, it wouldn't look like that for me.
Did you log in as co-host, Grant, by the way?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Yeah. If you're in chat or having a hard time getting into chat, just hang with us. We're having the same problem, so it must be a Blog Talk Radio issue, and we'll just continue to monitor that.
You can call us, too, if you'd like.
Yeah, right? Yeah, and the numbers are on your screen if you've got a comment. And I will ask you, if you do want to call in and make a point, go ahead and do that, but make your call brief, and then we can discuss it, and you can listen to the answer on the air. All right, back to meaningfulness. The whole point is that we have spent so much time, you know, a lot of time, analyzing things that just don't pan out. The big question is, should we rethink that? And that was the point of the pictures. Any other comments on, I know, Brian, you were talking about some evidence, I believe, in your thoughts.
Well, I think part of the problem is, I mean, the bottom line is the spontaneity of what we're dealing with. When you're talking about UFOs, you're talking about ghosts, these things just happen. It's not anything that you can plan on. You can't do a scientific investigation. These things are spontaneous in nature. So our hands are tied when it comes to dealing with the anomalies. So sometimes that leads people to kind of use blind assumptions. And there's a loss of critical thought when it comes to dealing with this stuff. And I've seen one of my examples is the Chicago O'Hare Airport incident that happened, I believe, in 2006. I think October, there was a supposed witness who did some video that he purportedly caught on his cell phone and got a hold of a gentleman who was blogging, and this blogger was all excited, hey, I got an inside story. So he put it up on his website, and hundreds of hits, I believe I even, the story went nationwide, that's how I picked it up. And I was really upset because that video did not match what that person was talking about, what he saw. Did not match what was in the video. So I kind of questioned that, and some other people questioned it, but it seemed like a lot of people fell in love with the possibility that this video was real, and there was a huge loss of critical thought. And that's just one example, and I think we see a lot of that happening in the ghost field as well. When people see something they can't explain, they automatically assume it's paranormal, and then they'll throw it up on YouTube and say, hey, look what I caught. I caught a ghost on tape or a ghost on video. They might not claim it, but that's the assumption. Throwing it on a station like YouTube, you're kind of assuming that that's what they're stating. It's almost as a matter of fact.
Good point. And, you know, somebody in the Paranexus forums, I forget who it was it James Daly? I forget who it was, forgive me. But they talked about grasping, right, on investigation, almost with preconceived notions, and you get some orbs or some weird things, and you're grasping to try to fit that into a paranormal conclusion.
Well, absolutely. There's one thing I'd like to say here, too, also, coming from a physics background. You know, a lot of your evidence these people are presenting as far as photographs and video, the only actual meaningful thing that I find in them are going to be, you know, you're just your descriptors. It's more, it's, they mainly just operate as a reference. That's all they do, and that's if they're legitimate. Like, for instance, if let's say I got a good video of a UFO, okay? The only knowledge we're really going to gain from this is, one, was it a solid craft? Was it aura type? You know, there's different types, but you're going to get velocity. You're going to get, you know, probable distance if you have any kind of horizon line or anything like that to actually do a little bit of distance judgment. But other than that, you know, as far as photographic evidence and video, all it provide reference, you know, and it needs to be kept in that context. I don't think it should be valued as heavily as the field wants it to be. You know, yeah, it's cool. You got a cool photograph, but that's beyond that. That's really all you have. And I just don't, I don't see really that much value in it outside of just the physics of, you know, like I said, video is about the only thing I've ever seen that presents any good evidence as far as usable. Photographs are just photographs, you know. That's at least that's how I view it.
Right. Documentation.
Yeah. It's just reference.
Yep. If I might pipe in there, one of the things I think with that too is going in with any type of preconceived notion, and that's both with the investigator, but also with the person that witnessed the event, whatever it may be. If they've got any type of preconceived notions, again, yeah, they're going to try and fit it into, they're going to be looking specifically for evidence that's going to confirm what their beliefs are. So they, in a lot of instances, they tend to overlook stuff when it doesn't fit to the that preconceived notion or the mold that they decided that this is what this is before they've actually got all the information in.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. Their mind has already been made up in many instances based on their belief system. And if their belief system is strong enough, you know, I'll tell you where I'm kind of at this point, guys, is I'm kind of at the point where I'm really seriously wondering whether how much of this is really an internal cycle thing that's projected externally onto the environment by people. And, you know, part of that construct is the belief system and how it impacts. I mean, I'm sure we can all, you know, recall investigations that we did where at the end of the investigation, nothing was paranormally significant.
Right.
And yet the people in the home refuse to believe it.
Right. You know, it really does. It goes back to the matter of perception, right? You know, which leads to belief. And, you know, I was talking to Doug about this. I find it interesting. We have so many different type UFOs. Now, I have some background in artwork, and one of the things you'll learn in artwork is, you know, you're taught to create illusion. And one of the main things they teach at the very beginning are your classic shapes. And one thing that I've noticed is people have a tendency to automatically assign a shape to something, even though they're not trying to rotate the actual shape in their head to know disc. Well, no, it was a cylinder on edge. Or, you know, they don't think this way. So what they do is they give a description of what they're seeing, which, you know, that's what they're seeing, but they're not logically looking at it. So, you know, you get bad description. You get assumptions on what they're viewing. You know, that's the same as ghosts. What they think are ghosts may not be ghosts. It could be natural phenomena. So, you know, that's the other thing I think that really needs to be taught out there as far as the investigator side. When you're reviewing data, to always look at every angle possible when you're viewing something. You know, there's too many roads to different answers on the same object if you ask, you know, different people here. You know, that's just like asking somebody a cylinder, and one person sees the edge of it, they're going to see a circle. If somebody sees it from the side, they're going to see a rectangle. If somebody sees it from a 3D perspective, they're going to see the cylinder. So, that, you know, that's the thing here, and they need to keep that in mind. You know, just because you have what appears to be a ghost, UFO, or something on a photograph or a video does not mean that's what it is. You know. So.
Good points. All right. So this first point is meaningful evidence. I think it's hugely important. You know, it's Juan and I were talking the other night, and he was talking, you know, not chasing lights in the sky or not making that the whole thing, right, Juan?
Right. Yeah, that's the whole point.
Exactly. And I want to clear up one thing too. You know, what I'm proposing here is not wasting too much time on evidence that potentially has little meaning or will add very little to our database. Now, you have to log these things for sure.
Right.
You know, you got to make a note of them because, well, that's just it. But let's focus on the other stuff. Anybody else have any thoughts on this before we move on?
Well, I can tell you from my perspective there, because as you know, I do a lot of investigations for MUFON also.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have a classification system as far as classifying
veracity.
Yeah, how important of a investigation that it is. Some of them are, I mean, you can pretty much call the person up and you know, you're basically checking base to verify that what they filled out online form matched, you know, what they actually saw, and to fill in any blanks that they may have missed. And then obviously, if it's anything that involves physical evidence or trace evidence or anything like that, you'd obviously investigate that a little bit further. So I think that's basically what you're talking about as far as that is, like setting up some type of like a triage, basically. Like if you have patients, that's what you would do with patients. You set up a triage, and of course the ones with the most severe injuries or whatever, the ones that you would handle first. And you know, we could probably do something similar to that, to where stuff where it's just, you know, well, here's a photo, and I saw this for about 10 seconds. Granted, photographic evidence will be great is to have a in-house expert, of course, to analyze the photo and determine whether it is an actual photo of something or if somebody was, you know, sitting there with paint or draw, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
But some type of triage system, I think, is probably what you're talking about doing, to where the smaller stuff, yeah, we log it, that's great, but then we move on into the much more important stuff.
Greater potential.
The stuff that has more substance, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's one thing to keep in mind, is the meaningfulness of the evidence. All right. And a second point that we wanted to discuss was education. And I know that many of us have talked about this, how important education is. And if you think about society in general and how important education is to society growing and evolving and becoming more, you know, education's critical, crucial to human evolution and even peaceful relationships. And I believe a strong need exists within the anomalous research field for education, but not just in education on how to investigate, but really the whole gamut, life skills included, education, people skills, how to interview better, how to go into an investigation devoid of preconceived notions, having those interpersonal skills that don't promote fear, you know, so that we don't inadvertently promote fear, and having the observational skills that are connected to people skills, such as being able to read people, read body language, look for other red flags that might be causing some of this activity. Any thoughts? No?
Well, I think it's absolutely essential, and I think that one of the things that Brian alluded to earlier was the lack of critical thinking. And I think that in a perfect world, if I were to have it my way and I was to say I got to rubber stamp each investigator with these skills, even the most basic investigator should know the basic components of an experiment, a scientific experiment. Because
yeah,
the things that you discussed, observation and documentation and all those things, are the very foundation. Even if somebody, you know, wants to chase orbs all day long, if they still have that basic, you know, foundation, they're going to, that should at least help or contribute to critical thinking. Without it, I think you're chasing ghosts.
What do you mean by that?
I think that those kind of folks have probably seen ghosts everywhere.
Right.
Broad daylight. Just a little comic relief.
Yeah, that was good. Now, just bear in mind, guys, that this show's this be conversational and laid back, and so take a deep breath and share your thoughts.
Well, I got a question for everybody here. Would you guys not agree that one of the main things in an experiment is knowing the pros and cons of your equipment?
That would be true. Yeah, you got to know your equipment.
No, that's just like an EMF meter. I've noticed so many times on these televisions, people are walking around with EMF meters, swinging, swinging them. And I'm like going, of course you're picking up ghosts. Oh, I got a high reading here, and I've got a high reading there. Oh, of course you are, you know.
But it's got
not,
pretty flashing lights.
That.
It's got pretty flashing lights, and when you move it, it really gives it a strobe effect. I'm absolutely correct. I think that the basis, and I don't think anybody here will disagree with me, the basis of a good experiment is the instrument you use.
Correct.
If the instrument is only as good at gathering what you're hoping to accomplish if you've designed it correctly. If you've screwed it up and you've misdesigned it, or you have a bias, everything's out the window.
Well,
right.
And the main point here, what I'm making a point of, is if everybody is using it properly the same way, then the comparative study can go forward from there. If not, you're going to have so many deviations that none of it's going to mean anything.
Well, all I was saying too, though, Mike, was that if somebody's using an EMF meter when they should be using a digital recorder, or something else, then they're not using the right instrument.
Oh, this is true too.
That's what I meant. That in that context.
Yeah.
Well, so, along with that, another example of, I guess, bad use of equipment, it was something that me and Jody had discussed last year, was the
Jody's
fact...
Jody's your wife and partner.
Yeah, Jody's my partner, the other founder.
This is Juan speaking.
Yes, this is Juan. Was the fact that we noticed, and not naming shows or whatever, was the use of the non-contact thermometers to pick up cold spots in the middle of rooms. Now, of course, this is prior to them using ones that had the ambient thermometers attached to the units, and that was another thing where people are seeing this and they're thinking, this is good, science or however you want to look at that, and it's a total misuse of the equipment. And I don't know if it was from lack of training or just something that maybe looks better on TV to use it in that fashion or whatever the case may be, but. Yeah, that's definitely a big problem, and I think one of the important parts is possibly, and this is something me and Doug were talking about the other day also, was establishing protocols, some type of set protocols, maybe where you have a group of people or a board that would look at a lot of different equipment. Obviously, you got to kind of do it within different price ranges because depending on the budget of the groups and stuff. But like best type equipment, because the fact of the matter is you can't, from a scientific standpoint, if everybody's using all sorts of different equipment, each one of these units, depending on who the manufacturer is going to, some are going to be more sensitive than others. Some will take readings faster than others. So again, it makes it a little more difficult to, not so much share information between groups, but...
Well, they would have to document the deviations off their equipment.
Right. But if we had some set protocol as far as, when doing this type of thing, this is the type of procedure that we're going to use, and because if everybody's doing the same thing... it's a little bit easier to recreate the same data. So obviously, if a location's got a haunt or whatever the case may be, granted we can't make them appear in command, but if typically, especially if it's something residual where it's happening at a certain time of the day every day or every couple of days or whatever, if people are doing the same type of taking the same type of readings and stuff, then we can substantiate and say, look, it just wasn't on this one occasion, and it wasn't just this one person or whatever the case may be.
Good.
Right. I think documenting it, everything is important, but I think what we're really missing is not only that people don't understand how these tools work or what the application is truly for, such as EMF detectors. Parapsychologists started using EMF detectors in the 1960s and 1970s, not to discover ghosts, but to discover reasons for ghosts. Mm-hmm. And I think somewhere along the line that translation got lost. But I think ultimately one of the biggest things that groups can do besides documenting and becoming scientists instead of saying that we're doing science is, beyond documentation, is actually the last step in the scientific approach, which is reporting your findings, giving out your data. It doesn't have to be on your website. It could be in one of these conferences or conventions with everybody else. And if you're doing your stuff right and you can present it in a scientific way, you should be able to get into a journal, a scientific journal, psychical journal, journal of science, anything, anywhere. And if we're doing that sort of thing of sharing our reports, our reporting on our case studies, then deviations between a K2 or any other kind of EMF detector, all that will be null and void. We'll have these reports to go on that each other group can take that documentation and put it into their investigation. Even though the problem is everything is spontaneous, and each case is going to be different. And that's what parapsychologists have been stumbling with the last 135 years. And I think that's what we're starting to get into, is that there are a lot of people doing things the right way. I mean, we're kind of ripping the field apart, but, you know, there are people that are doing things the right way. And I think a lot of people are scratching their heads, wondering, where do we go from here? Mm-hmm. And I think bringing in science and doing things the way parapsychology is done in other science fields, we need to finish it off by reporting our findings in a professional way and not just blogging about it on our websites.
Yes, and that brings up the registry, you know, the database. There are several out there, and that's what we've been trying to do, too, is build one with all kinds of sightings, because ours is a little different, I believe, than most, in that it will allow for searching for overlaps, which we'll get into in on another point coming up. But on this this whole point of education, Juan, as far as you mentioned, photo experts and so forth, and, you know, there are several of us in Paranexus that do a good job at that. There's several people who can really review those things, and that's good. And that's kind of along the lines of what I think you were mentioning.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we invite people, if you don't got something that's a meaningful picture, you know, post it on Paranexus. You can, you know, if you need some help in analyzing it, go ahead and feel free, put it in the forum, and there's a special board for that, forum board for that, both videos and photographs and even EVPs. We can all help with that. And just to encourage people, you know, if you've got cases, go and input them into the registry database. It'll only take you a few minutes. Just plug in that information, and we can begin to build, because we want to look for overlaps. Again, we'll cover that point in just a minute. Another related point to education, though, is cross-training. And experience, this is where I've come to, that it's no longer sufficient to focus solely on hauntings or solely on ufology or solely on abductions. The overlapping thing will come next, but it's related to that. We need to look at the entire breadth of the anomalous research field, and that's exactly why Juan and Brian and Grant and Mike and I are all on this program, is because we all do that. We all look at a variety of things so that we can look for overlaps. Have you guys any overlaps in some of your cases, potential overlappings? A phenomena?
I think more so with abduction phenomena, you're getting a lot of psychokinetic communication, which is important. If you're a ghost investigator, that's, you know, right up your alley, and you can help that person really maybe discern whether or not that's a dream state or if it's true communication going on through, I mean, not so much psychokinesis, ESP, you know, communication, mm-hmm. mental communication. So I've run into that in dealing with some UFO cases, the communication aspect.
And that's the exact point, because, you know, what if you go on a haunting and the person says, you know, I was visited by, you know, Grandma, you know, Martha last night, and I lost an hour of time.
Right.
Had missing time. Well, you know, you may not be dealing with a ghost here. You might be dealing with an abduction. And if you're not cross-trained, you won't recognize that.
Or for that matter, physiological. You know, there are people that have problems blanking out, and they may misinterpret it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seizures. The other thing, like he was saying, you know, that's one thing I've come across with abduction cases. I'm dealing with three different clients right now, and the descriptions range from everything from being abducted all the way back into dream state descriptions, and it varies depending on when it happened. And I do find it fascinating. Also, there's also psychokinetics involved, things moving by themselves. I mean, just all kinds of interesting things, you know. We had, you know, actual apparitions, different entities showing up, dead loved ones kind of, you know, situation. So, I mean, there's a lot of crossover, it seems like, in abductions for some reason, and I'm not too sure why, but it just, it's really fascinating.
It is. Anybody else have any comments on cross-training? I know Juan and Brian, you do both. You're familiar with various areas. Why? Why have you chosen to do that? Juan, let's ask you first.
Well, I think for me, again, I don't want to miss the big picture. I think it's great to specialize. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of people that choose to do so. But I think by leaving myself open to anything anomalous, what you're saying earlier, it allows me the ability to look at all these different things and analyze them individually, but also to try and figure out what that big picture might be. Because I have to agree with you, you know, you have all these different areas of the paranormal, and in, you know, in and by themselves, it's a pretty massive. Massive amount of information. I mean, if you look at the number of books that are written just on UFOs, it's astronomical how many books there are. But I do feel that by narrowing down to one specific area, you do kind of limit yourself, and I didn't want to do that. Along with that, though, it has to do with again, I guess going back to being biased, I don't want to lock myself down into one area. I guess get painted into a corner is the way I see that. You know, I see a lot of people, and some people, the minute you see a name mentioned or a group mentioned, you automatically think of, oh yeah, they're the people that do this or do that or do the other thing. And I didn't want that for us. I wanted us to be able to branch as much as possible into all these areas. If anybody wants to specialize internally, you know, I allow my people to do that, but you know, overall, though, yeah, I think it's always way better to be as broad as possible, to paint the broader picture as you can.
Good, Brian, comments on?
Well, a lot of things that he had said overlap with my things. It's an interest in an anomalous field. It's the same questions are over there that are in the ghost field. So there's an attraction. It's not just one field or the other. It's the anomalous, the whole thing. And when I started getting into it, I noticed a lot of similarities, just like we're talking about. When you're talking about sleep paralysis and psychokinesis and communication, there's a lot of overlap in the two fields. And not only that, there's a lot to learn by stepping outside of what you're normally doing and learning from a different field. When I became part of MUFON, I learned a lot about interviewing technique. Hadn't been able to learn through the ghost side that helped me develop better as a ghost investigator. And learning about how MUFON approaches their aspect of the paranormal side actually kind of helped me in the ghost world too. So it's branching out like that really can round you out as an investigator, not just a paranormal investigator.
Mm-hmm. And those are good points, being rounded out, being broad, being able to identify things. Those are all excellent points. Now, the chat room, Sharon asks, who is it that will declare officially that UFO ghosts are real? Would it be the media? Who's going to make the official call, and would it would stick? Now, Brian, I know that you'd made a comment to her. Do you want to take that? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a process. You know, when we're talking about ghosts or UFOs, you know, the old stating is, why don't they just land on the White House lawn? But you know, there's different angles to that. You know, who says that the United States is in charge, first of all? But second of all, we've been chasing this around for a long time. You know, in modern history since the 1940s, and we're no closer to any answers. There's thousands and thousands of sightings and documented occurrences from here to Mexico and everywhere else in between. So I really don't think that one event is going to define an answer. It's just going to raise more questions. And I think just like anything in science, it's a process. It's about collecting evidence, gathering data, and figuring out what is going on. You know, we could luck out and have a big crash that happens in the middle of rush hour in a big city, and everyone's witness to that. But there's still going to be questions. Even if we do gather a craft, who's to say that we're going to get all the answers from that
mm-hmm.
one craft? Because as a lot of people know, there's different types of craft and multiple different, you know, multiple sightings. So, you know, one thing isn't going to do it all. And when you're talking the ghost field, you know, everyone thinks that they're going to have that one photo or that one video that's going to prove everything, but you know, unfortunately, yeah. It's not going to be the case.
Mm-mm. You're right. Okay.
And even if it was legitimate, if it does come out, it would certainly not stand the onslaught, you know, of our kind of frenzy would surround it.
Agreed. Because again, it's pictures. You can't prove them. They can be compelling, but you can't prove them beyond, you know, conclusively. Mike, you had a comment?
Yeah, I was. I don't know how much this would go into education, but you know, we were talking about using equipment properly. I know one thing that probably the paranormal field is really lacking is equipment development. I've had numerous ideas I've told Doug about, but you know, I think that if all these researchers in the field would start getting together and teaching each other the things they're experiencing, the ones that have electrical backgrounds or engineering backgrounds could actually get together and start producing equipment that would better provide evidence like we're needing to be able to bring it to the public to prove that this stuff really exists. You know, there wouldn't be an issue. You know, that's like, here's a good, for instance, EMF, again, the EMF detectors. Did you know at one time in the physics realm that EMF was pretty much thought of as ghosts? You know, that was just a theory until somebody actually developed a piece that was delicate enough to pick up EMF. And so that's, you know, the same thing going here. Are the things we are experiencing, the things we're seeing are so transient in nature, and you know, who knows what frequencies they're running at. So it's a matter of having the right equipment development too, I think, in a lot of ways. And that, you know, that form of education between all the different researchers, I think, would actually help the field. You know, when if everybody would start comparing their events and letting the electrical engineers and stuff like that come forward and start working on this. And I know there are some in the field because we've got some people out in Arizona, I believe, that have done some stuff.
Juan, you have a comment?
Yeah, I was just going to say along with that, one meter that I do know of that actually seems to work fairly well and it was purpose-built for us is that MEL 8704. I don't know how many people are familiar with that.
Oh, yeah. We have two of them in our group. They're fantastic.
Yeah, and they work really good. And the guy that developed them, I mean, he purposefully built it for the field. So, I mean, there are some folks out there. Now, whether they have a lot of, you know, notoriety at this point, not everyone does. I know you can go to, I mean, you can do a search
on the Mel meter, or just there's actually a website that tells a little bit about the gentleman that designed it and the deal behind it, because there's actually a pretty good story along with the actual the name of the unit, because I kind of wondered on that, and there's a story behind that. It's something that you probably wouldn't mind looking up and reading, because I found it pretty. But in any event, there are some people out there doing it. And yeah, there is another group out here, and I know that they designed some of their equipment. I think they're affiliated with one of the television programs, one of the TV shows, and they do have some equipment that they've designed pretty much from scratch. And I know that they've also done some experimentation with some stuff also. So.
All right, good. Okay, so we've been talking about several points so far in the first here of how to reinvent the field. We've been talking about meaningfulness, trying to seek the meaning in these events and pictures and all that, if there is, and not wasting our time or wasting too much time with things that don't really offer meaningfulness or have a higher potential in that. We've discussed education, the need for education, but not just in how to investigate, but also in life skills such as interviewing, people skills, communication skills, things like that will help us all the way around in life. We talked about cross-training, how important that is so that we can recognize various phenomena if they overlap. And we've kind of talked about overlapping phenomena such as PK events. They happen to abductees, they happen to ghost research and so forth. We're going to be in the second half of the program after the break. We're going to be talking about some common denominators among these various fields and what the real focus of the anomalous research field is in reality and should be. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to take a short break here, and we're going to come back and continue our discussion. So hang with us for just a few minutes.
Where will you find a professional association of paranormal researchers?
Paranexus.org.
Where can you get research training, share data, and network with other researchers?
Paranexus.org.
Where will you find a set of international standards for paranormal research groups?
Paranexus.org.
Paranexus is a global professional association of progressive paranormal investigators, parapsychologists, cryptozoologists, ufologists, and psychically gifted individuals focused on understanding the human condition through the scientific study of paranormal and psychical phenomena.
Paranexus.org.
A place to learn, a place to share, a place to network, a place to come together. Join us now at Paranexus.org. And we're back. Thanks for hanging with us. We appreciate everybody's time tonight. This is Doug Kelly here with my co-host, Grant Rubendunst. Hey, Grant.
Hey, Doug.
Grant, of course, is the assistant director of Paranexus and also works in the psychological field. We're also with Mike Jones on staff with Paranexus Technical Development Coordinator and the regional director for Arkansas. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys.
We also have Juan Torres from the greater Phoenix area, who's the regional director for Arizona. Hey, Juan.
Hey, everyone.
And, of course, Brian Parsons from Ohio, who's the regional director there in the greater Cleveland area. Welcome back, Brian.
Greetings.
We are discussing how to reinvent the paranormal field or the anomalous research field. We've talked about education and getting the meaning out of things. And we are going to go into a couple of other topics, just a couple of things here. I put this in the chat room. I don't know if people have even been able to read it, but they're having some issues with the chat room tonight. We're getting in there sporadically, and we're trying to maintain that and read the questions as they come. So if you're having a hard time getting in the chat, just keep trying, and it should hopefully let you in. They've also told us to clear cookies, and that might help as well. So if you're having a problem, clear your cookies and try again. We appreciate you hanging in. All right, let's set up the common denominators among these different fields. We've talked about how important it is to be cross-trained because there are some areas that overlap, whether you're dealing with an abduction, for example, or a haunting. There could be overlaps. We've seen psychokinesis or PK activity, obviously, in both. So the big question is, and let me just set the stage here. Decades and decades of logging sightings, UFO sightings, abductions, ghost sightings, the whole thing. We spent decades, and as Brian said earlier, we know closer than we ever were. We've just got more data, which is still confusing. So if we change our angle, change our position, look at things from a different way, what are some possibilities? What are the common denominators of ghost sightings, UFO sightings, an abduction phenomena? You know, it's like we'll go investigate one case, regardless of what type it is, and it will tell us some things. So we'll draw some conclusions based on the evidence. Then we get a different case, and we draw some conclusions based on that evidence, and it's like conflicts with the first case. It's like we're being teased. Grant and I have talked about this on the program before. It's like we're just constantly teased with this evidence, regardless of what it is. And so what are the commonalities? Now, after a lot of them, Mike and I have talked about this considerably, and it seems as though you boil it all down, and of course this is just a rule of thumb, it's not hard and fast in every case, but if you boil it all down, regardless of whether it's a haunting, an abduction, or a UFO sighting, it almost seems like the two common denominators are fear and confusion. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think when you add fear to confusion, you get belief and belief systems.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it's based on belief. I mean, I could speak personally for both fields that I've been a part of that kind of through interviewing was able to get the client to realize that what they saw wasn't really what they saw or what they experienced wasn't really what they experienced. Now, that was in my opinion. That's something that they worked through on their own. They came to the realization that maybe their emotions got the best of them, and they jumped from one thing to another based upon what they see in the media, they see on television, or what's the popular belief. And obviously we've discussed that already about how that's spilled into what we do. It's changed our viewpoint on how we're collecting evidence. But I think is a huge thing. And I know, Doug, you've taught a lot in your CPI course and about beliefs and how they can affect what we see and what we do and what we deal with. So I think that's something that is great that we're getting a lot of amateurs getting into this field. And like I said in the chat room, where amateurs are viewing the paranormal field from a different angle. Parapsychologists viewed it from the living. They wanted to crawl in someone's brain and see when they see a ghost. But now, 130 years later, the amateurs are taking over, and they're looking at the ghost aspect, looking at the human, which is kind of strange when you think about it, because you don't think it makes much sense. But just like you said, it's a different angle. We're looking at things from a different view, and it's still in its infancy. I mean, a lot of people think it's only been around for 7 years, but the amateur movement's been around for quite a while, and it goes back even farther. So.
Oh, yeah.
You know, maybe well, you that know, different view will help us get to the answers.
But, you know, I think what we're really delving into here, and it's connected with this, it's so interwoven in this, is what is the nature of human consciousness and how our human consciousness perceives the events in the environment of us and how everybody's reality or perception of reality is totally different than the next person. But I think that the real frontier here is going to be learning about what constitutes consciousness, which is going to be an incredibly difficult task to begin with. Philosophers have been wrestling with it for thousands of years. But when we take in consideration the fact that perceived ghosts have near-death experiences, have a number of things that may be directly related to how our minds operate. I think the real frontier here is, I'm not saying throw out traditional investigations or how we have approached it, but I think we really have to put a larger focus on consciousness and human perception.
Yes, and that goes into what we're going to discuss on understanding the human condition and what part that plays. Anybody else have a comment on the before I refocus this here? Okay, cool. Let's go back to the common denominators. This is something that really puzzles me, because if you look over human history, we have all these reports, right, of elementals and fairies and trolls, demons. They're the greys, they're the malevolent inhuman spirits, the MISs, and it's like all through human history, and of course this is all into belief and belief systems, but it's also integrated into what Grant was talking about, you know, consciousness and so on. But if you look at it, all these sightings, think about what they produce. This is what puzzles me. If you see a ghost, now not everybody, but so many people are afraid, right? Fear. When people see a UFO, it can promote fear. When people are abducted, it certainly promotes. Now, and part of us researchers, we look at case after case, and I don't know about you guys, but I'm scratching my head. You know, if this is true over here, then what about this one over here? It's like the confusion. It's like we're teased constantly. That's so. So, is there a common denominator? That's a hypothesis. Is there a common denominator here? What if, Grant, now you talked about this before, you've mentioned it, you know, some sort of a parasitic intelligence that's been here all along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've talked about
that. Oh, yeah, what? Like Jacques Vallée, you know, has he's said in a number of his books that he thinks that it may not be extraterrestrial, or it may be something that's kind of co-inhabited in the symbiotic relationship with humans forever, you know, and it's, once again, it's about perception. It's about how we perceive our relationship with whatever that life form is, or whatever energy form it is.
Well, many investigators, too, have talked about how some of these malevolent spirits in the ghost field, you know, seem to draw off of people's negative energy, and that's been around. And many times it would almost seem so. So, here's these different questions. Is this some kind of a parasitic intelligence? Is it an alien intelligence? Is it of a unknown terrestrial intelligence? Is it something that is there that is creating fear and confusion simply to draw off the negative energy? That's just a question. Is that even reasonable? Anybody have any?
Well, I think, Doug, that, you know, anything's the possibilities are endless. And I recall the conversation we had talked about. Yeah, what if it is something that we can't perceive because our senses simply won't allow us to perceive it visually, smell it, taste it, whatever, and it kind of feeds off of psychic energy. So that if a person gets afraid, or they can create an environment that maybe through chemicals or electrical fields causes a fear response in humans, you know, maybe we're like, you know, they feed off us. Who knows?
Yeah, like the boogeyman.
But you know, the interesting thing about it, though,
no, that's
the interesting
just
thing
true,
about
though.
It is, though, is that you look at an inexperienced team out in the field, and all it takes is one person to think that they've been touched, and then, you know, what happens next? It's like a chain reaction sometimes.
Dude, run!
Yeah. Oh, sorry. You know?
Actually, if you look at last night's episode.
Fear is a very powerful thing, and you know what? When it gets out there and people are out of control, you're going to get a dude run situation.
Yeah.
Mike, you were saying?
Oh, I was going to say, I'm not going to name the group, but they had an episode on about a day ago that the first words out of the client's mouth is talking about demons. Well, guess what? Guess what they were experiencing through the whole thing? They were scared. They were getting in situations. They were throwing rocks and stuff, and it was returning the favor and throwing rocks back. What do they do? They don't camp it. I've been putting up a pup tent wanting to talk to it. You know, you know, it just amazes me. And I realize a lot of it's TV, but, you know, come on. If you're really doing research and you've got something that's interacting with you on a psychokinetic level, why are you leaving? You know, that just blows my mind.
Frustrates you, yeah.
Yeah.
That's because the show's only so long.
Yeah, and you can only have those beefed up, you know, dramatic sessions.
My point being is, what if it decides to really show up, you know, and get that on film?
Cool.
You know?
Should definitely be pretty interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't think it'll show up on national TV, though.
No.
But, you know, that's another thing for cross-training. I mean, what throws rocks? Bigfoot throws rocks. Apes throw rocks.
Yeah.
Pranksters.
I'm not going to go there. Okay. But, you know, Juan, you brought up the boogeyman. But you fit that in with everything. And, you know, I'm not trying to go too far out on a limb here, but what I'm trying to do is focus on what's the common denominators. What can we make? Can we look at this through a different angle, through a different lens, and say, you know, we've got all these reports, and granted, many of them are explainable. I know that. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But the percentage of these reports that we can't explain, you know, look at that whole thing. What do you make of that, the boogeyman?
Well, what I meant on that, Well, I thought because a couple of books that I've read just in different areas, just, like I said, I try to read not just in one particular area, but some cryptozoology books and stuff of that nature. Is if you start looking at just a history in general, and I was actually having a discussion with somebody earlier today at my day job in regards to, you know, you got to look at any time you have a disparity of technology, and what I mean by that is any time you would have one group of peoples that are way, way advanced, and then another group of people that are primitive in comparison. Well, those people only have so many different ways of describing things. And if you look at a lot of your mythological creatures or you know, vampires, this, that, and the other thing, you know, over thousands of years, if you look at those time periods, these people were trying to describe things in the best way, shape, form, or that they could. Really, a lot of the stuff that's going on even to today is not much different than what people were seeing thousands of years ago. They were seeing the same sort of things. They just didn't call them the same things, and they maybe described them a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good example, like you said, was like were like fairies, you know, or your elves. You know, they share a lot of similarities to how some people see some of these alien entities.
And of course, and I'm sure you're well aware of the fact that of the changelings, the changelings in history, where the elves or the little people came in and stole babies and took them off. And you know, there's that similarity there. So there's almost like this cultural, these archetypes that people, you know, that are, who knows where they come from? They're very deep in our consciousness.
Exactly. I mean, even, you know, if you start getting into the subjects of religion, the way religion even, I mean, you know, if you look at Christianity, most Roman Catholicism, they talk about ghosts, they talk about spirits. So it's not something foreign, and it's obviously something that even within these religious groups, they believe that these things are real. You know, if they didn't, you know, your Roman Catholic Church still have priests that are trained in the art of...
Savior came back in spirit.
Right.
So what does that say?
Exactly.
There are ghosts.
Exactly. And the same thing, you know, one of the things I was thinking about was, you know, somebody asked me, you know, what I thought about Scientology. And I was like, you know what, I'm not super familiar with it. I haven't really read a whole lot about it. I mean, I understand the premise behind what they're talking about. And does it make any more sense or any less sense than anything else that's out there? Well, you know, who's to say? You know, none of us know all the answers, you know. So you can't discredit what they're saying as, you know, not being factual because you don't know. So all you can do is take it for what it's worth. Again, I guess it's going back to a lot of this is you document it, you keep it in the memory banks, and by not tying yourself down to one small area of it and allowing yourself to go to branch out and go into all these different areas to cross train, as Doug was saying earlier, it'll allow you that ability to go, hey, wait a minute, you know, in the UFO community, this has been going on. This is really similar to this other thing, you know. I know there's been reference to, I think it's a night hag, and this goes way, way back to a lot of European cultures. And again, talking the you know, your night terror or to where your sleep paralysis, you know, this feeling of something pressing on your chest, whatever the case may be. This is stuff that's been documented back thousands of years. And again, it's still going on today. It's still, you know, as we get more technologically advanced and stuff, you know, it's less about fairies and dwarves and unicorns and this and that and the other thing that they were talking about, you know, back in the day. And now it's more about UFOs and that sort of thing, you know.
Great. Mike, you had a comment?
Yeah, just to add on to what he was talking, the fascinating crossover I'm finding in abduction cases. This is a good, for instance. I have a gentleman I've been pretty much coaching. he's reported. Now he okay. Let me start over. He lives in Europe. All right. The one thing he's reporting is these trolls. They're about 4 foot tall. All of them, they look identical. Okay. In the, you know, in the Americas, we have grays and reptilians, and they have reptilians in England also. But and we have shadow people, and all these descriptions are very, very close, you know, to each other, you know, which to me, in essence, is going back to how the person believes culturally, and what they're viewing. You know, it's really fascinating that how they're brought up, or what their belief system is, really does affect how they perceive what they're seeing. And I think that's something that needs to be taken into consideration when we start getting all these reports of abductions. You know, when you have somebody reporting all similar entities, you start having to question, you know, okay, is this just a projection of the person, or are the entities themselves actually letting the person see them in that shape? You know, are they shapeshifters? And that's, you know, what I'm saying.
Right.
Or, you know, are they, you know, presenting themselves in a manner that's going to either produce the most fear or produce the most calming effect for whatever, you know, results they're desiring? So, you know, that's something that needs attention to, I think, when you go out into the field and you're interviewing somebody, is to understand that, you know, that exists. You know,
that's the other key too, Mike, is with abductions, and as Juan kind of talked about and Doug did too, is that you may miss certain things that are characteristics of an abduction experience unless you really are familiar with them. There's a lot of things that people in groups may not be as well versed in. So to be cross-trained in certain areas, especially when it comes to abductions, is going to be critical.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And, you know, one of the things that when Mike and I were talking the other night about this whole thing, about all these commonalities, you know, you've got the reptilians, the elementals, the elves, the fairies, the trolls, the grays, the MISs, and you know, the interdimensionals and all this. And he said it's kind of like a, you know, if we're going along the fear and confusion hypothesis, it's kind of like a malevolent, inhuman, an MIE. And I thought that was, you know, as good a name to call it. I mean, what is it? And this gets us into another aspect that we want to talk about tonight, understanding the human condition. Now, before I get into this, I just want to mention again that the chat room is just not working very well tonight. We apologize. Something wrong with Blog Talk Radio. I've already notified them, and they're working on it. I can't even get in, so I don't know if anybody else is in our group here is in, but if you are and you see any questions, let me know. Let's get into the sixth point here, understanding the human condition. If we take a look, and I'm just taking a rough estimate here, just a rough figure. If we look at the majority of cases that can be explained one way or another, but they're non-paranormal in nature, but let's just say that most of the cases, around a figure of 90%, let's assume for a moment that 90% or thereabouts of these cases can be explained in some fashion. That leaves, of course, 10% that do seem to, they're unexplained, let's put it that way. And many of them do seem to support a paranormal hypothesis. You know, looking at this 90% as a round figure, what accounts for that? Grant was alluding to earlier, you know, the consciousness thing. But before we get into that, I want to ask, you know, what are we even doing this for? Why do people research anything? Why do we explore? You know, part of it's our nature, yes, but any scientific research, what are we doing it for? And if you keep asking why and you boil it all down, in my opinion, it's to better understand the human condition. Where do we fit in here? You know, it's the big questions. Who are we? Where do we come from? Where are we going? We're trying to understand better the human condition. So in this whole area of, if most of these cases can be explained naturally, what is it? Is there any commonality? Is it a group conscious type of thing, an id of sorts? Any comments?
Well, I think a lot of it arises out of the structure that we're forced to live in a lot of times. And also a lot of it has to do with culture, too. I think there's a lot of similarities across the board. I think that almost all these cultures have something in common in regards to their belief systems. Many years ago when I did some research in the near death, and I was relatively new at it, I was working at a hospital, and I asked an Indian doctor, I said, hey, have you ever heard of people in India having near-death experiences? My question was, well, when they die, obviously they're not going to see Jesus because, they're Hindus or they're Buddhists or whatever. And I said, when these folks related their experiences to you as near-death, are they cultural specific? And he said, undoubtedly, hands down, they see Vishnu, or they see whoever it is, whatever gods that are related to that particular culture. So if it is something that's intrinsically human, I think that's even more mysterious and more wonderful, because we've got to now define ourselves and our place in this dimension that we live in. Mm-hmm. And how we can eventually, we're not discounting the possibility that there's things beyond the veil that we can't see, but we need to keep striving to understand ourselves, and maybe by understanding ourselves better and the way we perceive our surroundings, maybe that will lead us on to a higher level of consciousness where we can maybe move into a different phase, or who knows, an evolution of consciousness, I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. It's a good term. And think about this. If what we're all doing, if we look at it this way, what we're doing is trying to better understand the human condition. If that is our goal, rather than just trying to hunt a ghost or hunt an alien or something, but if we're trying to better understand the human condition, doesn't that throw everything we do in just a little bit of a different light? In other words, all those cases that can be in some fashion other than paranormal, shouldn't that also interest us as well? What can account for all these false positives, if you will? The human psyche, look at parapsychology. I mean, it's based a lot on PK, the human ability to unconsciously move things without touching them.
But you know what, Doug? I also think that the whole field of parapsychology is going to go through its own little paradigm shift, because, there's been, for years and years, I think the traditional parapsychology group people have been chasing their tails looking for ESP or, psychokinetics in the lab, and they've never been very successful at doing it. But what I think, where I think that we cross paths with them, and the future of this whole research is with them, is in that it's got to be a blending of the psychological and how we approach it psychologically, and continue with the tests, but expand those tests beyond PK. Let's go into a lot of different other areas. And the only reason why they probably haven't is because the funding simply hasn't been there.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's typically the problem, because they don't want to touch this stuff because there's no money in it.
Well, it's also a quick end to your career.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the fact of the matter is, most researchers do research. It all boils down to money. I mean, it really does, because if a scientist doesn't see that they're going to be able to get anything out of it, I guess. I mean, don't get me wrong, I know there's some folks out there that it's all about just finding the answers, myself included on that, but for a majority of your big research firms or scientists, mm-hmm. whatever the case may be, unless there's an end prize, mm-hmm. they don't want to waste their time with it, because the fact of the matter is there's so much stuff out there that they can focus on where that, you know, where the money is and where the funding is and
well, where it can go commercial.
Right. What's the monetary reward for the research?
Exactly.
And so that's where the other problem lies, because who's funding the basic research, or most research, are these big corporations, except for academia. Now, academia, I will still say, in many instances and in certain types of fields, they can still do pure research without being tainted. But the big research, the big guys, those guys are all, they're bought and sold.
Well, pharmaceuticals, for example.
Yes, exactly. So that's a very good example, is the pharmaceuticals.
Whoever gets the first obesity drug is really going to cash in.
But that's like, recently, one of the things I was like, well, how great it would be to have an actual degree in parapsychology. Now, go ahead and try and find any university that actually has a formal degree program. If there is one, I haven't been able to find it.
Undergraduate or minor only.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you can get it as a minor, but and it's the same thing when you look at cryptozoology. I think also is another one of those where you can't take it as a major. Nobody, there's plenty of people out there that say, well, yes, I'm a cryptozoologist, but as far as a formal education, from a formal, traditional college or anything like that, there's none of that out there, and I do feel, I can't say enough about the stuff that you do on the site as far as the education aspect of it, because, the fact of the matter is, I think, going back to your points earlier there, when we were talking about education, the best thing I think that you're doing is educating everyone. I mean, granted, you may not have all the answers and stuff, but there's enough information already out there. It's just a matter of putting it all together, packaging it.
Mm-hmm.
And to where if most of this stuff, again, with the 90% of these cases that are false positives and stuff, a lot of that comes from, I can't think of it would be for ignorance on the subject matter.
Right.
Is the people don't understand, a light flickering, great, yes, that could be, ghost activity, that could be PK, but then again, it could be you just got really bad wiring in the house,
mm-hmm.
But of course, again, depending on how they're brought up, if it's like little kids. Little kids tend to not have fear. Fear's taught. Fear's not something that you're really born with, other than I think like fire, stuff like that. But as far as like fear of ghosts, this and that and the other thing, a lot, that's all taught. So I think one of the biggest things that we can definitely do as far as the company that you have is to continue to educate, to continue coming up with courses, whether it be small courses, big courses, whatever the case may be, and continue to try and get everybody on the same sheet of music. Because I think until we all are on the same sheet of music, we're going to be kind of grasping at straws.
And that's a lot of instances. And that's exactly what Paranexus was formed for, is to bring people together of like mind, and I can't stress that enough. Education is the key, and there are more courses and more books and so forth in the works, and that's why we set up Paranexus Academy, where anybody virtually can come in and teach a course. That's a good thing. That's what we want. We want people to come in and share. We're looking for people who want to grow. We're looking for serious researchers. We're looking for people who have maybe started out as the hobbyist or whatever, but who want to move more into this. Because, when we get to the end of our days and we're on our deathbed looking back, are we going to have a bad case of the woulda, coulda, shouldas, the if-onlys and the might-have-beens? Are we going to regret not taking it to the next level? Because, when you're about ready to kick, it's like all that stuff that we were preoccupied with, all those worries and fears that were largely irrational, they're going to vaporize. They're not going to mean much then. What are we doing to further the field? And this is the point in this program. It is, what can we do to reinvent the field? Now, many of the concepts we've talked about tonight are not necessarily new. Grant, you mentioned Jacques Vallée and others who have talked about some of these different things, who are looking for the commonalities, and that's this whole designed to provoke our listeners to thought. What is it that's going on? Because we can't continue to do the same thing we've always done. You know the saying, if you always do what you've always got or done, you'll always get what you've always got. And we don't want to keep getting what we've always got. We want to rethink it. That's who we are, folks. We're human beings. We're explorers. We can overcome. And if we can understand, we look at it, this whole field, the anomalous research field, and by that term I mean ghosts, UFOs, abductions, and even other things, all of it. If we look at it as an attempt to better understand the human condition, that's going to open up a lot of things. Now we're not just looking, quote, for ghosts or just looking, quote, for UFOs or looking just, quote, for abductions. We're looking for the meaning in that for us. If, in fact, they're true, what does that mean for us? And the ones that are not true, that still tells us, like Grant said, I mean, that's a whole big thing there. Why is it that the human beings have the capacity to perhaps create some of this stuff? Is it part of the human psyche, an unconscious part? Is it part of group consciousness? What is it exactly? We want to understand how this all fits with us. It's a fascinating topic, and we invite anybody who is interested in this, who's intrigued by it, to come and share. You know, this is not an ego thing here. We're not, and there's no egos. We're just looking for answers, and we're looking for people of like mind to come and contribute and offer your expertise, your uniqueness to the whole thing so that we can all benefit. We all sharpen each other.
And it's, you know, Doug, it's so absolutely imperative that people, and when we talk about education, you know, we're not talking about formal education. You don't need a formal education. I met plenty of people that have sheepskins that, you know, sometimes don't have any common sense. But, you know, the bottom line is that it's about educating self through, you know, self-enrichment in the area. If that, whatever part of the area interests you, whether it's UFOs or it's cryptozoology, whatever it is, go with it at a passion. But never stagnate. Continue to think out of the box. I think where groups also get in trouble is when they get fixated and stagnated on one, and then it becomes true for them. And then what happens is those groups disintegrate because when the non-believers or the skeptics go, wait a minute, they're out. So you get a big group thing going on there. But the one other comment I'd like to say, you know, is, Doug, our group, when we started off as a spirit team, we did quite an evolution. And one of the things that I really thought that we all kind of came to, I mean, the key spirit team, which became Paranexus later on, we all kind of came to the conclusion that we were approaching the way investigations totally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Too noisy, too many people. And we went in and we were quiet and we observed and we didn't walk around with a bunch of instruments. And I think the results were far more fascinating when we approached it that way, because I never discount the possibility that something paranormal might be out there. There may be something absolutely beautiful and fascinating in the dark out there. And what we have to do is we just have to keep in mind that may always be out there, kind of tantalizing and dancing out there, a little bit out of our reach. But the important thing is to just to keep on striving and to keep an open mind and to evolve in your thinking and in your group's thinking, the way you approach your investigations.
Amen, brother. Amen, brother. You know, Brian, you in your email, can't talk, in your email to your email to me, you know, in response to this, you'd mentioned something that I thought was a nice thought, that you have observed that many groups out there have started out, perhaps as hobbyists and amateurs, but they're getting smarter. Want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think the discussion we're having here, I think a lot of groups have had amongst themselves. I know there's plenty of groups out there that I've talked to that had the same kind of thought process. They want to move forward. They want to get out of the rut that we're in about just the thrill seekers and the guys that are out to stomp in graveyards. People want to move forward. They want to know what to do. And I think, I generally think some people just don't know what to do or what area to go to. And I think a lot of stuff we covered tonight about educating yourself, that's a huge thing. Learn about other fields, not just anomalous fields. Learn about math. Statistics is a huge thing that's missing from the paranormal field.
Absolutely.
You don't see a lot of study work. Learn about the scientific process. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And people are frustrated. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of constraints in our field. Everything is spontaneous, and it's so hard to document something that happens spontaneously. And I know everyone on this panel agrees that the client comes first. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes that can get in the way of trying to conduct things the way you want to do it. Sometimes it turns out the way you have to do it, and that's helping the client. And, you know,
well, in most cases, the client is the focus. That's, you know, the witness. Go
right,
ahead.
Well, ultimately, yeah, it's that experience that you're trying to define, but sometimes just helping them, you know, coaching them through their situation is ultimately more important. But I think if people really realize how many positives there are with the new technology, I mean, so when I started out, I was using 35 millimeter. I was using micro cassette recorders. As a matter of fact, I have a shoebox recorder that I still use with giant tapes.
Holy cow.
And people had any, I mean, can you imagine having, people complain about listening to a digital recorder, but try 4 or 5 stacks of tapes and having to fast forward and rewind.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, we've come a long way with the equipment and the EMF detectors. Man, $50, $20, $30, $40 you can get a decent one. You know, I bought my Mel for $90.
Yeah.
That's excellent. I mean, that's the equipment has never been better. But like we've said, we have to be careful with that and not get lost with that technology. The technology is there to supplement our work, not do the work for us. And I think
exactly. People
need to understand that.
Very good point.
Mm-hmm.
A huge thing.
Well, we're down to the last couple of minutes, and we've talked about a number of things, and we invite those of our live listeners to listen to the archive again. We've talked about looking for the meaningfulness in evidence and not wasting time on things that are not potentially meaningful. Log them, yeah, but move on. We've talked about education, including cross-training among the different fields, education and people skills, interviewing skills, that kind of thing. We've talked about how data seems to overlap, or the phenomena seems to overlap, and the common denominators of seeming to be fear and confusion among all these things. We talked about the focus of what we do, rather than to identify paranormal phenomena per se, it's to understand better the human condition. We talked about a lot of other things as well. Mike, any closing thoughts? Anything?
One of the biggest things to me that needs to happen in the field is learning to have an open mind. You know, there's a lot of times, you know, you were talking about getting painted into corners. I think a lot of these people go into the field to start with open mind, and through their own belief systems end up painting themselves into a corner and don't believe anything else. So I think keeping an open mind and always looking for new ideas to bring to the field and share with your colleagues, you know, that's going to be the thing.
Good, and we invite anybody who is interested in this to join us at Paranexus. There's a lot of member benefits. We're trying to make this thing work, and it is working. We're looking for serious researchers, so come and join us and help out, and we'd love to have you. So we appreciate everybody's time, and thanks so much for your time tonight.
Oh, it was fantastic. Thank you for having me.
And Juan, thanks so much again for joining us and getting off work a little bit early, I know.
Yeah, no worries. I was very, very honored to be on the show.
Great. And Mike, it's always good having you back.
Thanks.
And Grant, as always.
A terrific show tonight, everybody, and a job well done. Yeah, it was wonderful,
yeah.
Doug.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us tonight, for taking time out of your day. And we look forward to seeing you next week. We have Stephen Mather-Lees going to talk to us about where did we come from, you know, did our DNA, was it engineered by aliens? Interesting concept. Nice guy. So we'll invite him next week, and we'll see you then. Until then, good night. Great night. And a week.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night, guys.
Sky. It's Paranexus Universe.